Grade 1 Conference, Lecture 42, Storytelling, Part 5. It's probably clear from what we've done thus far that we could have an entire conference on nothing but storytelling. It's a very rich subject, and I hope that you will look a bit more into it yourself. You may know that there are some wonderful books out there by Nancy Mellon, M-E-L-L-O-N, who is a master Waldorf storyteller and has focused a lot on the therapeutic nature of storytelling, not only in the Waldorf context, but for adults as well as children. And there are always new books coming out on this sort of thing. As I said, I mentioned my own as well, and I've enclosed the, as a PDF, the introduction to that book called The Cry for Myth, which will also help you in a practical way concerning creating your own stories. I want to give you some suggestions, though, because once again, there's a feeling about so many things in the arts. Oh, you know, that's only for special individuals. There are born storytellers. Yes, there are, but there are storytellers who are made as well. And here again, you know, we're not talking about creating deathless masterpieces. We're talking about creating something that is imaginative, pictorial, that has a sort of beginning, middle, and end to it, and that is going to help the child at that moment. I told many, many stories in the course of my 30 years of teaching that I can't even remember. And maybe they were good, I don't know, but I didn't have a chance to write a whole lot of them down and didn't think it would be of any value. It was only later on that people began to approach me to make them more permanent that I started to compile them. And I probably will continue to tell stories in classes or to individual children as time goes on. And once again, the important thing is that it lives in that moment, that it is really alive, and that there's some relationship to the story you are telling to what lives within the child's heart and soul. So once again, it has so much more to do with understanding the child in front of you, their temperament, their development, the, you know, strength or weakness of their etheric forces, that is where the inspiration is going to come from. And this is what anthroposophy really helps us understand, that the modern path to inspiration is not just waiting for the thunderbolt and waiting for the muse to whisper in one's ear. It's actually starting at the path of thinking, of understanding, of cognitive activity on our part in the service of understanding the child. And that will lead us to many things that one would have never imagined possible, because the child's angel wants that child to be helped. And if that angel is really desperate about help, they might even put you to work at doing it. You know, you're not just being inspired by your own angel or other higher being, your own muse. You're also getting the help of the child's angel and of the collective angelic host of all of the children. If you live with that, you will find yourself being inspired. If you want some examples, one of the greatest writers of pedagogical stories for children is no one less than the great novelist Leo Tolstoy. But his fame as a major novelist rests on only two novels, Anna Karenina and War and Peace. He wrote others as well, which are great, but certainly those two are just among the greatest creations of world literature. And then he stopped writing novels and for the most part wrote very little in the way of literature for adults altogether. because he realized that the problems in Russian society, this was pre-revolution and not even that long in advance of the revolution, the greatest problems had to do with the education. And so he took up the education of his serfs' children. He freed the serfs, but they never really trusted that. They thought he was tricking them or something like that. So they kind of stuck around. And now he had all of these freed people who wouldn't leave him and their children. And so he went on a tour of Europe and looked for the very best educational systems, the best practices. Too bad he was a few decades in advance of Waldorf education. He came back and started a school for the serfs' children, and he became the storyteller in residence. So collections of Tolstoy's short stories will have several of his masterpieces for adults, but will also have some of the major longer works that he wrote for children, such as Ivan the Fool. That's one of his most famous. And What Do Men Live By? That's another major one. Those are both very mature and certainly can be told to the upper grades. But he also wrote a whole lot of little fables, some of them one or two paragraphs long, some of them just a few pages long. They're not fables in the sense of Aesop that are appropriate for second graders, but I'm not even saying you should tell any of these, though you might want to, and some of them are fine for children first grade age. But just read them yourself to see how one could take the simplest theme, and at times Tolstoy could be very preachy. He was very, very much against the consumption of alcohol, and some of his stories were written specifically with that in mind. So you can see somebody who's kind of putting one message in the story, and even then he doesn't succeed at that because there are other elements as well. So I would say sit at the feet of that master and get a feeling for how wonderful stories can be written with the very simplest of plots or characterization. And that in turn can really help you. Another figure that I point to is going to be a lot less accessible. And this is someone named Albert Steffen, who upon the death of Rudolf Steiner in 1925 became the general secretary, the kind of director of the Worldwide Anthroposophical Society, and looked after activities and events at the Goetheanum for, almost 40 years, 35 years or something like that. He was a wonderful writer. He wrote in German. He was Swiss. And wrote many, many wonderful pieces. And he was kind of well known when he was writing on his own. When he got involved with Steiner and Anthroposophy, even though in many respects his work changed for the better, if anything, he just lost all recognition and was just marginalized in literary circles in Europe. But here is someone who also mastered the art of the one paragraph story, or two or three. And he also brings in this kind of quality of the elemental world without sentimentalizing it, without sort of driving it to the ground. His works are very hard to get to. They're called Little Myths. You'd have to probably try the Anthroposophical Library in online, the Anthroposophical Society Library. I don't know if the online Waldorf Library carries Steffen's works. They should. Maybe you could get them to think about it. So those are little gems, and I'm sorry that they're so hard to get because they also afford tremendous inspiration. And other than that, just look into books of stories for children. See why certain things are so successful. Not that necessarily they're right for a Waldorf class, but what is it that these authors are bringing to children that make these stories so incredibly popular? Are they things that perhaps you could be bringing to the child as well, but in the context of understanding child development and understanding the needs of your particular children? So that's one aspect, a sort of material that can inspire you. And here's another. I cannot emphasize enough how wonderful it is to take a short walk every day and have some direct experience of nature. Now, you're hearing this from a fellow who grew up and happily, contentedly lived in New York City for the first 21, 22 years of his life, and chose to go to college there and things like that. So I'm not saying this because of my strong ties to the land as a child or anything like that. And even in New York City, you know, you could find here and there a patch of grass. You could find a tree growing in the most unlikely place. You have Central Park or whatever. And I can tell you that actually some of my most wonderful and meaningful experiences with nature as an inspirer were vacant lots, sort of plots of land which are disappearing by the minute in New York City, on the far west side in particular of New York, the southwest part of the city before it got all developed. So I'm just pointing to the fact that it doesn't take much nature, that you know, to see the world and a grain of sand and heaven and a little flower, that you don't need much, because nature is densely compressed with aspects, qualities of spirit and soul, particularly, of course, the plant world. And I would say that, let's say, you know, you're dealing with some big problem with a child. You know that it's going to take more than a story or two to solve it, but still, you'd like to have that as, you know, one of the things that you're going to put in the hopper to help this child. Some story, maybe a little play that the class does to help this child along. And don't just sort of live with that question by yourself. Take a little walk, and if you can look at a flower, or if it's winter, if you could look at the bare branches of a tree. And of course, Rudolf Steiner gives us these various preparatory contemplative exercises in which we try to intensify our relationship of nature. And I can tell you that these are very, very powerful and very helpful in making those creative juices flow. Once again, if this story is really needed, it's there. It's waiting for you. You know, it's waiting for the doors of perception to be opened so that that story can flow in. And it's living in the child, but it may be brought by that child's angel to you in all sorts of ways. So remain open. The world of nature, number one. Things that people may say to you, number two. Number three, you know, just pulling a book off a shelf and looking into it. There again, you may suddenly find an idea, a sentence, a phrase, an image that is going to help you. But I would just ask you to take this matter of creating stories for your children very seriously. They will probably by no means be the best or the greatest stories that the children ever hear in the very literary Waldorf curriculum, but for some of these children, for many of them, they will be the most important stories that they ever hear, because they will know in their heart that you created it for them. And that will mean a lot, that may really help them take a step forward in their life. Please have a look at the stories I've attached, the PDFs, the Cry for Myth, and again, if you want to look a little bit more extensively, also at stories for older children that I've done, you can get the book Why the Setting Sun Turns Red and other stories. And now we will go on to the best-known stories that we tell in the first grade, and to some degree, the best-known stories that we tell in the entire Waldorf curriculum, because there are a lot of people out there who think that fairy tales are all that we ever tell the children right through 12th grade. And I haven't known teachers who've taken it quite that far, but, you know, you can understand why that stereotype got formed. We'll just look at them in terms of first graders. On to the next lecture.